For the first time ever, SmackDown was in France tonight, and according to WWE, it was the highest grossing SmackDown in history. I'll tell you what, you know, going into WrestleMania, WWE was on a hot streak. A lot of sellouts on the road to WrestleMania, but you kind of expected it because you had The Rock and Roman Reigns and Cody and that whole story going on. But they have been able to keep up the momentum so far coming out of WrestleMania. And these crowds, they've been on some international tours. They were in the UK, I believe, last week. I saw a video from Gunther. He was in Vienna. He was in his home country the other day getting a hero's welcome. And they have been packing these crowds in. And I will tell you what right now, this show tonight, which was taped earlier in the day, this crowd in Lyon, France, if this crowd is going to be anything like this tomorrow for Backlash, we are in for a very fun pay-per-view. I will tell you that right now. This is going to be, it's like a year ago when Backlash came to Puerto Rico. That's what this is going to be like tomorrow and maybe then some. Holy shit. I mean, this crowd, it's one of those things where you just wish you could take all of that enthusiasm and just bottle it up and take it back with you to the States. You know what I mean? And just use a little bit of it each week. Whenever you need to, oh, this crowd tonight here is kind of dead. Let's pop the bottle open. Let's take some of that energy and use it somewhere else, right? You just wish that you could do that, but you can't. So you just enjoy it while it lasts. That crowd made this show tonight. And this show tonight was punctuated by a face-to-face confrontation at the end of the show between the champion and the challenger, heading into Backlash, Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles. Face-to-face one more time before their big undisputed title match. I was just happy to see Cody is okay physically after what happened last week in the match with Carmelo Hayes, that very scary spot where they both did the springboard off the ropes. They both missed. Cody landed hard on his shoulder. There were no injury updates on him. Nobody said anything about it. But he turned out to be okay. I felt the same way when I saw what happened to Powerhouse Hobbs a few weeks ago on Dynamite against Jon Moxley. And as it turned out, he suffered a very significant injury. He's going to have surgery. He's going to be gone for a while. I saw Cody land on that shoulder. I'm thinking, oh my God, they banked everything on him. They're building SmackDown around him. That's the last thing they need. But Cody is okay. I'm happy to report that Cody Rhodes is all right. The match is a go for tomorrow. They closed out and technically it was not the closing segment, but they closed out what I thought overall was a good go-home show for Backlash. I thought they did a fine job of promoting the two key matches for tomorrow's show, which are Cody Rhodes against AJ Styles, and then the tag team match, which is going to be Randy Orton and Kevin Owens taking on Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga, representing the bloodline, or I guess you would call it a new bloodline that they have now. And those are the two key matches tomorrow. I mean, I guess you could throw in the World Heavyweight title match as well. But they did a good job of promoting the key ones that they had to here on this show. We also had three more names declare for the King of the Ring tournament in Carmelo Hayes, LA Knight, and Santos Escobar. And I don't know that it's official. We haven't gotten the official announcement yet, but they did declare. So I think it's safe to assume they will be in the tournament. Now, you throw in Gunther, who was the first man to declare. You throw in Drew McIntyre, who was also declared. Maybe Sheamus. Maybe even someone like Bron Breakker. And this is already shaping up to be a very strong field. If they can give these men time, because they're going to be starting the tournaments on TV this week. So on Raw this Monday, the King of the Ring kicks off. It continues into SmackDown next Friday. They're doing the tournament matches on TV with the finals. And I think that's what they did 2 years ago, or maybe it was 3 years ago, the last tournament they did, saving the finals for Saudi Arabia. If they give these men time, and I know we're going to have the commercial breaks and they're very disruptive, but if they give them time on TV, this tournament could turn out to be something very special. Because already, without knowing all of the names that are going to be in it, it's a pretty stacked lineup of people. And I didn't even say anything about, you know, like an Ilya Dragunov, who's going to be debuting on Raw probably as soon as this Monday. He should be on Raw. So that's going to be something special. One thing, though, that was very apparent from Raw Monday, SmackDown tonight, you know, we've been having these people declare for the King of the Ring tournament. And I don't like that. I think it's stupid. I wish they would have had qualifying matches for this. That's the way they used to do it. And the reason I think it's stupid and it's very dumb is because, unlike even something like the Royal Rumble, where you have people who will sometimes come out and say, I'm declaring for the Royal Rumble, and yet still in some years they will have qualifying matches occasionally for the Rumble, which doesn't make any sense. But in a case like this, if you could just declare for the King of the Ring tournament, then why wouldn't everybody on the roster declare for the King of the Ring tournament? Why wouldn't Berto declare for the King of the Ring tournament, right? It's stupid. But my belief here is that they are doing the tournament matches on television in the weeks leading up to the show, and so I think they just don't want it to be overkill. Maybe in their mind it would be overkill if they had qualifying matches and then they go right into the tournament matches. I think that's the way to do it. They opted not to. One thing that was glaring, though, we've had people left and right declaring for the King of the Ring. Why are none of the women declaring for the Queen of the Ring? It's King and Queen of the Ring. Everybody is declaring for the men's tournament. Nobody is declaring for the women's tournament. And what I'm hoping is that now that we are in this new era that they love to talk about so much with Mr. Levesque over here, he will take a different approach than the old regime took to what they called the Queen's Crown. I would like to forget that that happened. The Queen's Crown was a colossal waste of time. So I'm hoping we're not in for a sequel to that, and they actually put some thought and some effort into the female side of this, into the Queen of the Ring. But why nobody has declared on that side and everybody is declaring on the men's side, again, that's just something that doesn't make any sense. Now, WWE is hyping a major announcement for tomorrow. See, Tony Khan is not the only one who can hype up major announcements here. They're hyping up a major WrestleMania announcement. They told everybody to make sure they're following them on all their social media platforms. They didn't say exactly when the news is going to drop. It might coincide with Backlash when Backlash goes on the air tomorrow. Don't forget, it is a 1 o'clock Eastern start, so prepare accordingly if you are planning on watching the show or checking out this guy's stream over here when it's over. It's an early start time tomorrow. But they're going to have a WrestleMania announcement. They did not say what it is. I think it's safe to say they're going to finally announce the location for WrestleMania. And for the longest time, Minneapolis was in the running. And all you heard about was U.S. Bank Stadium, and Minnesota made a play for it a long time ago. They're going to get it. They're going to get 41 next year. And then all of a sudden, the conversation began to change in the last couple of months. And you heard a lot about Las Vegas. I've been waiting for WrestleMania to come back to Vegas since 1993. I think Vegas is the perfect location for WrestleMania, especially now that they have an actual stadium there. Back then, they didn't. But Vegas has been picking up a lot of steam in the last few weeks. And then Undertaker went and made a comment on his podcast a few weeks ago saying that he kind of let it slip that they're doing it in Vegas next year. I'm not sure if he knew that it was official, but obviously he was privy to conversations that were going on. So it looks as if the announcement is going to be the WrestleMania is coming to Las Vegas. That's my take. If I had to put money on which one it's going to be, I would guess that it's going to be Las Vegas, and then Minneapolis would get 42. I'll tell you why I think it's going to be Vegas. One of the biggest reasons why I think it's going to be Vegas, besides the fact that it's a big vacation destination, if The Rock is going to come back and have a big match at WrestleMania next year, and any match The Rock has is going to be big. But if the plan is for The Rock to come back and have a main event match with Cody Rhodes or a main event match with Roman Reigns, I don't know that The Rock is going to want that big main event to happen in Minneapolis over Las Vegas. I think the appeal of it being Las Vegas, it's just something I think that would be more appealing to them and to him if they were going to hype up some big fight, right? It's like UFC, they do so many events in Vegas. I feel like for a big match like that, they're going to want a big location. And in their mind, they may look at it and go, you know what? Vegas is the place to be for 41. And then we'll save Minneapolis for 42. That's what I'm thinking here. So we'll find out tomorrow. We won't have to wait very long. But that is coming up tomorrow. This is your WWE SmackDown review. You don't have to wait until tomorrow for this. You got me right now. It is Friday. It is May 3rd. 2024. I am the Sala Monster. Like, subscribe, super chats are open. 400 likes is the goal for Be the Booker tonight. And for those of you who have not already figured it out, I will be live tomorrow. Backlash taking place at 1 o'clock Eastern, so probably going to be live on YouTube sometime around 4:30-ish, not long after the show is over. Come on back here, less than 24 hours, and I will go through the good, the bad, and the ugly. Hopefully there won't be any ugly. I'll tell you what, with a crowd like they had tonight, it's hard to imagine the show tomorrow being ugly at all, but I'll be back with you to cover the pay-per-view at that time, and hopefully you are here with me. So let's zip on through this. The show tonight opened with an 8-woman tag team match. It was Bayley, Naomi, Bianca Belair, and Jade Cargill taking on Tiffany Stratton, Dakota Kai, Kairi Sane, and Asuka. Tiffany Stratton has been given the Def Rebel treatment. I guess her previous music may have also been Def Rebel, but she's been given a new song by Def Rebel. They must pay for what they have done. I don't know how, I don't know when, but they must be stopped. This is not an upgrade over the theme that she had before. So right from the jump, the crowd was just electric for this match. You did not have to wait very long to get a feel for this crowd. Right from the opening entrance, right from the opening mat. And everybody got an entrance here. So all the baby faces came out and got entrances. The heels, they got entrances. And they did that on purpose because any other week, I think we only would have gotten the baby face entrances. But these people were going nuts for everything. And I love the arena there. I don't know the name of the arena, but it's a unique setting in that they have the modified smaller setup and the wrestlers come out. And it's almost as if they have this horizontal screen that runs along the wall of the arena. So I just think when the people walk out there in the entranceway, it just makes for a good visual. And so we'll have that tomorrow for Backlash as well. So right from the jump, crowd was going nuts for pretty much everything they were doing. And they don't get to see this live very often. Naomi and Kairi, they started things out. Bianca tagged in, landed a standing moonsault for a two count. She lifted Kairi for a delayed vertical suplex, hit it, and then threw Asuka to the floor. Bayley tagged herself in. Back from a break, Tiffany hit an Alabama slam on Bayley and had her pinned, but Naomi broke it up. Stratton knocked Cargill off the apron with a forearm shot, and then followed up by running Bayley into Naomi to knock her off the apron. Bayley suplexed Stratton and then exchanged an awkward look with Bianca. Not the first time, not the last time that these two have shared an awkward moment in these last several weeks. And it would not be the last time, in fact, on this show that these two would have an awkward, tense moment. Jade got back up on the apron. Bayley tagged her in instead of giving the tag to Bianca. And Jade comes in and she hits a pump kick, hits a power bomb, tags out. So again, she's not doing too much. And I would expect the same tomorrow with Backlash, where I would be surprised if Bianca does not start that match. And if they do, you know, the spot where the babyface is in peril and needs to make a tag. They've done that before with Jade, where she stays on the apron and they build to the hot tag and she gets it. And the place goes crazy, which I'm sure they will tomorrow. And then she gets to come in and look good and do some power spots. It's a formula that's worked so far. I would expect the match tomorrow to play out much the same way. But she tagged out, didn't stay in there very long. And then we got a series of rapid-fire spots that ended with Bianca dropping Dakota with the KOD and pinning her while the fans counted along with the referee's count in French. A perfectly decent match in any other building, but in front of this crowd, it was a lot of fun. Now, we got a small preview here of two different matches that are happening tomorrow. We have the women's tag team title match tomorrow, and we have the triple threat for the WWE Women's Championship. So we had a little bit of a preview with the participants here in this match. The bigger story, though, is the issue or issues that persist between Bianca Belair and Bayley. Bianca Belair does not like Bayley. She made that very clear heading into WrestleMania when Bayley got betrayed by Damage Control. She had no friends. And Naomi felt bad for her, and Bianca said, what do you feel bad for her for? Did you not see what she's done to me, her and Damage Control, making my life a living hell the past 2 years? Bianca hasn't forgotten. And so there's still a tension there that they're really playing up between these two women. And again, Bianca has made it very clear she really does not want to have anything to do with this woman. Even backstage when this was over, Kayla Braxton interviewed Bianca and Jade. Bayley and Naomi were standing by. And Bianca looked right at Bayley while she was saying that she had hoped now to be finished with the Damage Control for good after Backlash. And Bayley left the room. Jade tried to calm Bianca down. I think regardless of how the women's tag team title match plays out tomorrow, this is building to a women's title program between Bayley and Bianca Belair. I don't know when. I don't know if they maybe would hold off on that for SummerSlam, because that feels like a big enough match to use on a card like SummerSlam. But that's where this seems to be headed. This is going somewhere. And the logical place for it to go, and Bayley is going to need some opponents, would be Bayley against Bianca for the women's title. Not right away, but again, maybe later on as we get deeper into the summer. Nick Aldis was in the back, and he was talking with the newest addition to the SmackDown roster, Carmelo Hayes, and he welcomes him to SmackDown. Hayes said that he almost beat Cody Rhodes last week. Almost doesn't count. That's what he said. And he wanted to keep his momentum going, so he was declaring for the King of the Ring tournament. Aldis said that we'll talk about it. And as I said before, those King of the Ring matches are kicking off on TV next week. We're actually going to find out, I believe this was WrestleVotes that tweeted this earlier. We should find out the Raw side of, at least on the men's side, if not men's and women's, the Raw side of the brackets tomorrow. And then on Monday, we should find out the SmackDown side. And Monday is when the tournament matches kick off. So Bobby Lashley entered the room. He greeted him warmly. Hey, Carmelo, what's going on? Welcome to SmackDown. Everything's cool between them, it looks like. Lashley tells him, you know, call me if you ever need any advice. And Hayes said, nah, I think I'm good. I was a first-round draft pick last week. I wrestled the WWE champion. So Lashley called him big time and said, look, it's not about the shots you shoot. It's about the shots that you make. And Hayes asked Lashley, so when was the last time that you shot your shot? Of course, Lashley didn't like that very much. And Hayes went to go leave. Lashley stopped him and offered him some free advice. Be careful who you disrespect. Already making enemies here on this show is Carmelo Hayes. Oh, we have some breaking news here. We have some breaking news here during the stream. The Green Pianist in the chat is hereby declaring for the King of the Ring tournament. So we have yet another person declaring for the King of the Ring. There you go. There you go. It's like a virus. It starts to spread. One person declares, now everybody wants to. Fucking unbelievable. We have the Authors of Pain against the New Catch Republic, Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. Akam and Dunn, they started things out. Dunn had control early until Akam caught him in midair. Bate tagged in, hit a series of European uppercuts until Akam clotheslined the hell out of him. Rezar tagged in, lifted Bate up. Bate fought out of it, though, and tried to suplex him, and that did not work out so well. Didn't work out too well. Not then. Stay tuned. The crowd started rallying behind Tyler Bate. Rezar worked a bear hug on Bate until Bate wiggled out. He got the hot tag to Pete Dunne, who came in. He worked over both members of AOP. And that ended with a sliced bread on Rezar. So Tyler Bate tags in, and he picks up Rezar, and he slowly begins to hoist this man up on his shoulders, and everybody in Lyon started losing their minds. And then he did the airplane spin on the big guy. Huge reaction. Dunn tagged in. He hit a running knee strike. Akam, though, broke up the pin attempt that followed. Bate and Dunn, they executed the finger joint manipulation spot on Akam. Scarlett hopped up on the apron because she and Karrion Kross were out there in their corner with Paul Ellering, who does not speak. He does nothing. He stands there. He has not said a word. He has not cut a promo. He has a very stoic look on his face. You could put the original Michael Myers Halloween mask on him. That's all emotionless and shit. And that would basically be Paul Ellering. Just draw a little mustache on it. You know, he was a favor hire for Triple H. Triple H brought him into NXT. He didn't do much there either, but at least he would cut promos from time to time. You know, back in his day, he was a pretty good promo. I know he's probably in his 70s at this point, but still. I don't know why the man never speaks. Why not utilize the gift that God gave him? I don't know. But he was out there as well with Karrion and Scarlett. Scarlett gets up on the apron. And that distracts the referee as Karrion Kross assaults Tyler Bate on the outside. And then back inside, AOP hit their finish on Pete Dunne, and they picked up the win. Another match helped by a hot crowd. I love the reaction that Bate got when he finally lifted Rezar up on his shoulders. That was great. Now, keep in mind here, both of these teams were drafted to Raw. I don't think that this means we're in for an extended program between the two. There could always be a rematch, I guess, based on what happened here. I bring this up, though, because New Catch Republic is a babyface team. Miz and R-Truth are the World Tag Team Champions on Raw. They are a babyface team. Every team on Raw is a babyface team, with one exception. And that exception, as of Monday when the rosters lock, is AOP. AOP is officially the only heel team on Monday Night Raw. If you don't count the Judgment Day, because they're not really a team, and Dominic is out for the next 6 to 8 weeks, so he can't even team up with JD McDonagh right now. They're going to have to do something about that. That is not sustainable. To have a tag team division, since you split the titles and have one heel tag team, and that heel team of all teams is AOP. Not good. Not good. Somebody's going to have to go heel. Might I suggest the Creed brothers. But even if they go heel, you still need at least one more. Can't have one heel tag team. That's ridiculous. So backstage, Nick Aldis was in his office when Paul Heyman walks in. And Heyman asks him, he says, did you get my memo? And Aldis says, I did. Says, request denied. Goes, you want me to pull Randy Orton and Kevin Owens out of their match tomorrow? He said, why? Heyman said, fine. Leave them in the damn match. What happens to them tomorrow is not on my conscience. It's on your conscience. And he goes to leave, walks off camera, and Aldis says, is that by orders of the tribal chief? Heyman walks back into the camera. He's got a smile on his face. He goes, that's not funny. And Aldis says, what? Says, you said all communications of the bloodline and Roman Reigns must go through Paul Heyman. So are you in charge? And Heyman says, there's a difference between being in charge and being in control. I haven't even spoken to Roman Reigns since WrestleMania. And you could see the look on his face at that moment. He realizes that he has done fucked up by admitting that. And Aldis says, I'm sorry. What did you just say? You haven't spoken with Roman Reigns since WrestleMania? So when he pulled himself out of the draft last week, and then Heyman interrupted him and said, Roman Reigns did not withdraw himself from the WWE draft. I pulled Roman Reigns from the WWE draft. You have to understand what's going on here. He says, I have no choice, or I had no choice. I cannot subject Roman Reigns to the chaos that is going on within the bloodline right now. And you can't subject Kevin Owens and Randy Orton to what awaits them at Backlash at the hands of the bloodline. So Aldis says, well, you know what, Paul? If you can pull Roman Reigns out of the draft, you can try to pull Randy Orton and Kevin Owens out of their match. And he tells Heyman that you can do it on the RKO show, which is coming up next. Interesting little slip up there by Paul Heyman. Admitting that he is the one who pulled Roman Reigns from the WWE draft last week. I would imagine if... Now, let's think about this, okay? Let's think about this for a second. What did he say here? He said that I have not spoken to Roman Reigns since WrestleMania 40. If that is true, and Heyman said that he took it upon himself to withdraw Roman on his own, well, apparently Roman Reigns had pulled himself anyway because Roman Reigns did not show up at the building last week. So when you really dig deep and think about it, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. If Roman didn't pull himself, he would have been there. Obviously, he wasn't there. But Heyman is taking credit for doing it himself. But again, what would Paul Heyman, like, think about the story here. What would Paul Heyman have to protect Roman Reigns from? Right, if what Tama Tonga said a few weeks ago when he confronted Heyman in the hallway in the back after they murdered Jimmy Uso, and he walked up to Heyman and he said, by orders of the tribal chief. If what he was saying was true, then the tribal chief is Roman Reigns. That means Roman gave the order, which of course you and I both know he probably didn't. But if that's the case, Roman would have nothing to be afraid of here, right? Unless there is another tribal chief, which clearly there is, another tribal chief here who is being referenced there by Tama Tonga. All signs here, ultimately, point to The Rock being involved, pulling the strings, manipulating things. Evidently, the way he tried to manipulate things behind the scenes going into WrestleMania this year. All signs point to a bloodline civil war, right? We could have figured that out a few weeks ago. I mean, I put it in the fucking thumbnail. I said bloodline civil war is about to erupt. Now, it's going to be a slow-burning civil war because Roman Reigns is gone for months. Rock is gone for months. Who knows when we're going to see Rock again? And so all these things have to play out without the two key players in this story even around to be on television. So they're going to take their time with this. It's going to take a while for things to play out the way that it does. But it feeds nicely into this story of a brewing bloodline civil war. Paul Heyman right now is a man with no power. He hasn't spoken to Roman Reigns. He can't give any orders to Solo Sikoa or Tama Tonga because they don't respect him and they don't listen to him. And that's the position now that Paul Heyman is in on this show. He is a man basically with no power. So what is going to happen with Paul Heyman? Where ultimately is his loyalty going to lie? Is it still going to be with Roman Reigns when he comes back? Is he going to flip and be on the other side with the new bloodline? You know, one thing that Heyman, you think about his career, he's always been very good about. Yeah, it was moving on to the next big thing. It was Brock. Then he betrayed Brock and he went with Big Show. Ultimately, he went back to Brock. He was with Punk for a while. After Brock lost to WrestleMania, he thought Brock was done. He hitched his wagon to Roman Reigns. Right? He's a survivor. That's why he's like a cockroach. That's why he's survived as long as he has. That's the story they're telling. And very interesting to see what the next chapter of this story is going to be. I think I know what the next chapter of this story, or at least the next character in the existing chapter of this story is going to be. I think we're going to see him at Backlash tomorrow. But we had the first ever RKO show with Randy Orton and Kevin Owens that followed this segment here. Owens spoke in French to the crowd, which of course they went crazy for because they love it when you get somebody who speaks in their native tongue. Orton and Owens, they sat in chairs in the ring. You know the format of the Kevin Owens show. This was no different. Orton stood up, and he was all fired up from this crowd. Like, he stood up, and he said, this crowd is so freaking amazing. And everybody went crazy for Randy Orton. That made them even louder. Orton said that they're going to kick the bloodline's ass at Backlash. Owens explained that, you know, he kept getting phone calls all week long. That's like me, too. I, too, get phone calls all week long from telemarketers. I pick up the phone. It's in Chinese. I can't understand what they're saying. That's when I make the mistake of picking up the phone. Most of the time, I don't. I'm supposed to be on some do not call list. Apparently, that doesn't work. In the case of Kevin Owens, though, he was getting calls all week long from Paul Heyman. So finally, on Wednesday at 4 o'clock in the morning, he relents. He sees the name on the caller ID. He doesn't want to answer it. He relents, and he answers the phone. And it's a call from Paul Heyman, who asked to be a guest on the RKO show. So Owens asks Orton if he wants to do the honors and introduce the wise men. Heyman, though, walks out on his own, no music, doing his ladies and gentlemen bit that he usually does. Heyman said that he came out with respect, admiration, and wisdom. He got into the ring. Owens said, told Orton, look, you can't RKO him right away. And Orton said, no, I'm more of an out-of-nowhere kind of guy. And Heyman got the message at that point. He slowly walked back out of the ring and just opted to stand on the apron instead. The crowd interrupted him with chants of, we want Roman. And Heyman said, I want Roman Reigns too. He said, look, I have great respect for you two men, but the rules with Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa are very different. And he asked Owens and Orton to do themselves and their fans and their families a favor and back out of the match of Backlash. Owens said that Heyman is not really in a position to give advice because everything around him is falling apart. Orton asked Heyman who the real tribal chief is. And Heyman said, look, you're putting me in a very difficult position. And the whole world knows there is only one tribal chief. And before he could say anything more than that, Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa, they ambush Orton and Owens from behind. A brawl between all four men broke out. Officials spilled out to try to break them up. And that was the entire segment. It was a fun segment. I love what they're doing with Heyman right now because he is caught between a rock and, well, in a matter of speaking, a rock and a hard place, right? That's where his character is trapped right now. Him just walking out there and being deathly afraid of Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa is getting over Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa. Like, there are different ways that people can get over. They can get over just because they come out and cut really good promos. Maybe there's a cool factor to them. Maybe they go on a win streak, right? There are guys that have gotten over by going undefeated, right? There's a lot of ways that people can get over on a wrestling show. It's a very unique talent to have somebody like a Paul Heyman, and this is a talent that some of the great managers of all time have had, Bobby Heenan and Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette and many others, Jimmy Hart, where just by the way they act, just by their mannerisms, just by the tone of their voice, their facial expressions, whether it's fear or anger or whatever emotion it might be, they can help get other people over a certain way. In this case, by Heyman coming out every week and looking like some kind of abuse victim, like he's got PTSD, he comes out there, he's shaking, he looks terrified. He's getting over the fact that these two men are dangerous. They're dangerous, they're unpredictable, you don't know what they're going to do next. I have no control over them. It's like Dario Cueto on Lucha Underground when he had his brother, the Monster Matanza, that he would literally lock away in a cell. And then he would unlock the cell, he would come out, right? And he would usually guide him. He had like a key around the neck. But there are times where you lose control of that monster. That's helping to get these guys over. Tama Tonga has not even wrestled a match yet. Tama Tonga has yet to have a single match on WWE television. And already he comes out there and he's being portrayed as this dangerous badass. So that's his way of helping to get them over, and I think it's very smart. Once we get Jacob Fatu in there, which I think is going to happen in less than 24 hours, we're going to get Jacob Fatu added to this new bloodline. That's going to change the game. Because Jacob Fatu, if you are not familiar with him, Jacob Fatu is fantastic. He's going to fit like a glove, like the glove that Tama Tonga was wearing on his hand tonight when he came out to attack these two men. He's going to fit like a glove. He should have been in the bloodline a long time ago. And I look at someone like a Jacob Fatu and I say, that's a Paul Heyman guy. I don't know if at some point that might happen where Paul fully embraces him and or they break off and he becomes a true Paul Heyman guy. Maybe it doesn't happen. But I look at a Jacob Fatu and I say that could be a future Paul Heyman guy. What Heyman and Roman Reigns have been for the past 3.5 years, 4 years, that could be Paul Heyman and Jacob Fatu. And then eventually we get Jacob Fatu against Roman Reigns. Could very easily work. We had LA Knight one-on-one with Angel of Legado del Fantasma. They hit LA Knight's music, and holy shit, did this crowd explode for this man. To the point where when LA Knight came out, he was looking around like even he was surprised. Like, holy fucking shit, I wasn't expecting that. It's just, it's funny to me because you hear people who say, oh, he's not as over as he was 6 months ago. And it is true that in a lot of buildings, when they hit his music and he comes out, the reactions are a little more muted, just a little bit, than they used to be. We all know why that is. It's nothing that he's done. They put him in the ring with Roman Reigns in November, and he lost. And then they didn't really have any plan for him. They beat him. It took the entire bloodline to do it, but they beat him, and then they had nothing for LA Knight. Didn't even get that U.S. title match I was hoping he would get at WrestleMania. He got a win, at least, over AJ Styles. And then he lost to AJ Styles a few weeks ago, which is why AJ is challenging for the title tomorrow, and LA Knight is not. This right here, this is a glorified squash, with Knight winning with the BFT. It was what it needed to be to get him back in the win column coming off that loss to AJ. And he ended up declaring for the King of the Ring when this was over. So when the match was over, LA Knight grabbed the microphone and he said he wants to talk to us. He says the same song plays no matter where they go. Another dummy dropped on his head, and three, the hard way. He's not going to say that this is his ring. He's going to make this his ring. And he's going to do that by entering the King of the Ring. Santos Escobar gets a microphone. He interrupts him, and he warns that he will be the one winning King of the Ring. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we all need goals in life, I suppose, right? Yeah, he's not winning King of the Ring. But he thinks he's going to. Knight admits, look, you know, I do talk a little bit too much, but the people like it. Escobar should be happy that he talks, because when he's done talking, that's when you get stomped out. Then you find out, or you find yourself laying on the mat thinking, what in the world was I doing? Well, the whole world reminds you that this is LA Knight's game, and then he did his little bit at the end and got the crowd to chant along. But just when you think, as you hear the chatter, that this man has lost a lot of steam over these last 6 months, he walks out there and gets a reaction like the one that he got. Now, everybody on this show got a pretty damn good reaction. Men, the women. This one, though, when they hit his music, maybe more than any other, even when Randy Orton's music hit, he came out, this place went nuts. So it is very apparent that LA Knight is still very much over. And I still think that Gunther or Drew McIntyre are more likely to win King of the Ring. I think because they're more likely to be challenging for the World Heavyweight title before LA Knight ever challenges for the WWE title. So I think that's a lot more likely. But he is another big name to add to the tournament. And if he's not going to win, I hope they have a plan for him coming out of it. Because you have somebody here who gets a superstar reaction like that and is still over, and you want to make sure that you have him doing something that is meaningful, that looks like it's leading somewhere where you can watch as a fan and say, okay, I think I know where they're going with this. You know, I want to see them build to him and Logan Paul, for example, maybe it's SummerSlam. I just want to make sure they have some kind of plan for him and they don't squander what they still have in him. I was worried about the same thing, especially going into WrestleMania when it looked like they're not going to have shit for this guy. They're going to squander whatever, you know, goodwill they built up with him. And they haven't yet. Yet being the key word. I don't see him winning King of the Ring, but he doesn't have to. As long as they have a plan for him coming out of it, then he'll be okay. We got a video recapping the turn last week that we saw when the footage was aired from many weeks ago, before WrestleMania even, of Dragon Lee being attacked. It turned out to be Carlito, who attacked him in the back. So live here, Byron Saxton is in the back to interview Carlito, who's still wearing an LWO shirt. He got drafted with the entire LWO. They're all going to Raw. He is still technically part of the group, even though he beat up one of its members last week. And he said he wants to know why. Like, why did you do that? Why did you attack Dragon Lee? And he says, you know, I was away from WWE for many years, and all I wanted was a WrestleMania moment. And when Rey Mysterio chose Dragon Lee over me, that wasn't cool. So he took matters into his own hands, and at that point, Dragon Lee showed up, and he attacked Carlito. So we'll get that as a TV match probably sometime in the next few weeks. I don't think he, could they enter them into the King of the Ring and have them wrestle in the King of the Ring? I don't even think that's necessary. Nobody believes Dragon Lee or Carlito are winning King of the Ring. You can get a TV match out of it. Again, they're all going to Raw. This is going to play out for a while. You'll get Carlito against Dragon Lee. You'll get Carlito against Rey Mysterio. But it's still very weird that he is technically considered part of the LWO despite what happened last week. We had A-Town Down Under, Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, the WWE Tag Team Champions. Oh, I love those belts. I do love those new belts. I just wish there was a little bit of blue there in the middle, especially for SmackDown, but that's okay. The belts still look good. Theory and Waller against the Street Profits for the WWE Tag Team titles. Waller and Theory, they jump-started the match and attacked the Profits. Street Profits quickly came back. Montez Ford dropped Waller with a rock bottom. Then Angelo Dawkins tagged in. He went to the top, hit a Swanton bomb. Theory and Waller, they were on the outside. Ford hit a Swanton onto both of them. And then back inside, Waller was the victim of a double back suplex.
Look, everyone, it's Samoa Bro.
It's Samoa Bro, courtesy of our friend Fire Panda. Thank you, Fire Panda, for the super chat. I'm going to read yours and everyone else's here in just a few minutes, so hang tight. After a break, Ford was hitting Theory with a whole flurry of moves. Waller tagged in, went to the top rope, hit an accidental coast-to-coast on Angelo Dawkins. So what happened here, this was very awkward. Montez Ford moved out of the way. Dawkins had been laying down on the opposite side of the ring, up against the ropes. So when he dove off and Ford moved, he ended up colliding with Dawkins. And he more so caught Dawkins' leg than anything else. I'm not even sure he was supposed to. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. It just came off very awkward. So I'm not sure exactly what was supposed to happen there, but it was just very strange. So Theory pulled Ford outside the ring. Theory and Waller went for a pair of rolling maneuvers. Dawkins, though, countered them both. Actually, he pounced Theory out of midair, and he got some good height on that, so that was good. The Profits hit a tandem blockbuster on Austin Theory. They got a nice near fall out of that. Dawkins lifted Theory, and Ford went to the top. Theory worked out of it, though, and crotched him. Dawkins rolled up Theory, but the referee did not see it. And Waller hit Dawkins with a rolling flatliner. Theory then pinned Dawkins to retain the titles. How many times have the Street Profits, I'd say over the past year, challenged for the tag team titles on either brand and lost? I feel like it's happened quite a number of times. And every single time, they seem to come up on the losing end of things. Just very strange. Match had a lot of heat due to the hot crowd. And Waller and Theory, I look at them and I think they're a good pair of pest champions. They're very good at being pests. So they're doing their job. They're doing a fine job in that regard. They work well together. I think it's a good spot for them to be in. And the show closed with one final face-to-face confrontation here between champion and challenger. Going into Backlash tomorrow, the WWE champion Cody Rhodes and the number one contender AJ Styles. Cody spoke to the crowd in French, and they all loved it. AJ interrupted, and they did not like that. And then they started to make a lot of random noise. This is the best way I can describe it. They weren't chanting anything in particular. They weren't singing a song yet. They just started making a lot of really just loud noise. And then they had the pan out shot so you could see everybody. It's like the building was almost shaking. They just started going nuts for no reason. So AJ said, look, what I was gonna say is it's like Cody isn't focused right now, not focused on what he should be focused on. And Cody said AJ has his attention. Two Georgia boys. He grew up in the state of Georgia watching AJ. AJ cut him off at that point and said, look, I don't need that crap, okay? I don't need you to tell me, oh, I watched you when I was a kid. I don't need to hear any of that. I may be older than you, but I'm still in my prime. And Cody was like, I didn't say that you weren't. The fans at that point started to chant, what? I couldn't tell if they were chanting it in French or not, but clearly they were doing like a what chant here. And it got AJ. He kind of reacted to it, but he stumbled over his words, so he let it get to him. But then he recovered after that. He collected himself. He got back on track. Then they started singing the Olay song. AJ said that Cody loved it here until things got a little rough, talking about the first time he was in the company. Things got a little rough, and he couldn't handle it, if you know what I mean. And AJ, at that point, did the Stardust hand signal, gesture, whatever it was. He said Cody packed his bags and left. For AJ, he was kept out of WWE for years, and when he finally came, he was not welcome with open arms in the way that Cody was. He had to work his way to the top, all by himself. Unlike Cody, who had Hall of Famers and legends watching his back at WrestleMania so that he could finish his story. A bunch of guys that I've beaten before. I beat them all the same way that I'm going to beat you with Backlash. Said he's going to find a way to the top again and remind Cody and everybody else that he is phenomenal. I'll tell you what, he's in phenomenal shape. If you have not seen him, and WWE put something up on their YouTube channel, AJ from his house, he did the cold plunge. He's got that tub to do the cold plunge. I see everybody doing the cold plunge. Apparently, this is a big trend now. But he did that, and they show him doing jump rope, and he's in his gym working out. This guy is, I mean, he's fucking jacked. I mean, he is in the best shape of his life at the age of 46. Cody asked him, who are you trying to convince? He said, certainly not me. I've called you the modern-day excellence of execution. I called you a first ballot Hall of Famer. He said, but don't tear me down just to make yourself feel better. And he says his very first title defense happens to be their very first match together. The crowd was singing something. I could not tell exactly what it was that they were singing, but Cody did not let it breathe. He just kept talking because clearly he knew that they were running low on time and they had to wrap this up. So he just kept cutting his promo, but it was so loud that it was hard to hear. He had to really kind of pay attention to what he was saying. Because it was deafening in that building. But he said tomorrow, he's not looking at AJ as phenomenal. He's looking at him as his first. And that is too sweet. And he did the too sweet hand gesture. Cody dropped the mic. AJ threw up the too sweet, but instead of too sweeting him, he smacked the taste out of Cody's mouth. And then he left the ring. Then, this was not the end, because then they cut to the back. We got some shaky cam here. They cut to the back. At least we didn't have the camera cuts. There is a difference between the constant camera cuts that we were subjected to for years and shaky cam. This was shaky cam. The cameraman catches up to all the mayhem in the back because Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, Solo Sikoa, and Tama Tonga are still brawling. They're still trying to break these four guys up. Solo tries to use a chair on Randy Orton. He avoids it. Orton gets the chair, hits him in the gut, hits him in the back, and that's how they went off the air. If this crowd is as hot tomorrow for Backlash as they were here for SmackDown, there's no reason to think that they won't be. This is going to be like Backlash in Puerto Rico last year. And Backlash in Puerto Rico last year was one of my favorite shows of the entire year. That whole atmosphere in that building that night, from the moment that Bianca and Io came out to open that pay-per-view through Bad Bunny and Damian Priest and everything else on that show, was on fire. And it really does affect your perception of the show. It could take a good show to a great show. It could take a mundane show to a pretty good show. It's amazing how that enthusiasm and that volume, the decibel level in the building can make such a difference. But it's just fun. fun when they're into it that much and they're reacting to everything, even the things that normally here in this country people would be sitting on their hands for. To them, they're having fun with it. So I think that tomorrow is going to be a very fun show for that, if nothing else. Because if you look at it on paper, it's not the strongest lineup on paper that they put together. There's some good matches on there, but it's not like a blowaway lineup or anything like that. But with that crowd fired up, tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun. Speaking of tomorrow, let's get into Backlash here, because we got Backlash predictions to go through. Now, I did these earlier in the week. My predictions have not changed, and they have not added any matches. And maybe the most surprising thing to me as I look over this card, this is not a joint pay-per-view in that you have like an even split of Raw and SmackDown. There is exactly one Raw match on this show. This is basically a SmackDown PLE is what this is, which is very surprising to me. I thought they would add one more match, maybe a Raw match. They didn't do that. But here's the lineup. We have the Kabuki Warriors defending the women's tag team titles against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. Always a chance that Bianca and Jade don't win, and they choose to take Bianca and really push her towards Bayley instead. I just don't see these two losing. I don't see any chance of it, realistically. So I'm going with Bianca and Jade to win the women's tag team titles. We have Randy Orton and Kevin Owens teaming up to take on the team of Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. No reason that the Bloodline should lose this match. But you know they're not going to win fair and square. So how do they win? I think this is where we get the debut of Jacob Fatu. This is where they get their newest member. He helps them win. Solo and Tama pick up the W. And now we're off to the races. Because now we have Solo, we have Tama, and we have Fatu. And Paul Heyman has no idea what's going on. And that means that when we get closer to the point where Roman Reigns is ready to come back, he's going to have to make amends with his cousins. He's going to have to get together and reunite with the Usos. The Usos themselves are going to have to let bygones be bygones and get back together. At least for the purposes of this program. They can still use Jey Uso as a single if they want to. But the end goal here is Roman, Jimmy, and Jey back together, because Roman needs his blood, taking on Solo, Tama, and Jacob Fatu. And that could be the War Games match, come Survivor Series. There's any number of ways they could go with this. Fatu is under contract. Fatu is ready to debut, and I think it happens tomorrow. Unless for some reason he can't, you know, travel overseas to be there for the show, but I don't see any reason why that would be the case at this point. I think that's fine. We have Bayley defending the WWE Women's Championship in a triple threat match against both Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Love Tiffany. I think she's going to be a huge star. I'm booking. I have her winning the Money in the Bank, turning that briefcase pink. But winning the women's title right now, I don't see it. I think it's a little premature. I think in a triple threat match, she doesn't even necessarily need to be the one to take the losing fall. But it also puts Bayley in a position where she doesn't have to be pinned to lose her title. So there may be a little bit of drama here, but to me, I think Bayley is going to walk out with the belt. I don't think you could take that title off of Bayley anyway until this story with Bianca plays out. And they've really been playing that up. It doesn't really work as well if Bayley is not the champion. I feel like she has to be the champion. Bianca needs to go after her at some point. Bayley is not losing this title. We have Damian Priest defending the World Heavyweight title, the one Monday Night Raw match that we have on this show tomorrow, defending against main event Jey Uso. Initially, I thought that maybe Fatu would debut and he would cost Jey the title. There's going to have to be a way to bring Jey back into this at some point. But you could wait and do that with Roman when Roman is ready to come back. I don't know what shenanigans are going to be involved here. Something involving the Judgment Day, I suppose. I cannot see Damian Priest losing the World Heavyweight title, at least before Clash at the Castle. I don't see it. Jey Uso is not going to be the World Heavyweight champion. So Damian Priest will retain, and then we have the undisputed WWE Championship on the line. It is Cody Rhodes defending his title against the phenomenal AJ Styles for the first time in a very long time, back in the world title picture. I couldn't even tell you the last time that I remember AJ Styles in a pay-per-view main event getting a title opportunity for any title, let alone the WWE title. Maybe the last time he lost it to John Cena in 2017. Actually, no, he had the title after that. He had the title for his feud with Nakamura. So maybe it goes back to that. Maybe it goes back to the Shinsuke Nakamura stuff. But even that was many, many years ago. So Cody Rhodes losing his title in his very first title defense? I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't need the odds makers to tell me that Cody is probably the odds-on favorite to walk out here with the title. What I will tell you, I'm picking Cody Rhodes to win, but what I will tell you is I could see this being either a no contest and Cody retains or a disqualification finish. I don't think this will be the only time we see these two in the ring together. You know, you've got the Saudi show coming up next month. The focus is going to all be on King and Queen of the Ring. It's the name of the show. But they're probably going to want Cody to defend the title on that show, I would imagine. You can get another match out of it between these two and throw a stipulation in there. Whatever it may be, whatever that stipulation may be, I don't see this being the only time they go at it. So having Cody just beat him clean with a Crossroads, I have a difficult time seeing that. He's not going to lose the title here, but there could be some funny business as far as the finish is concerned. And that then leads into a rematch. Because one thing coming out of this draft that is very clear, Cody Rhodes does not have a lot of viable challengers on SmackDown. He does not. Not without turning someone, whether it be Kevin Owens or Randy Orton or LA Knight. And that I would not be doing. Did you hear that fucking reaction that guy got tonight? Do not turn LA Knight. Not yet. That would be very dumb. So who is there? I mean, you're going to have Cody feud with the Bloodline again? He probably will at some point, but it would be way too soon for that. And you certainly don't want to send Solo Sikoa or Jacob Fatu in there and have them lose. So take the Bloodline out of it for a second. Why wouldn't you try to get at least two matches out of this AJ feud? It gets you through another month. And then when you get to June and you start to get to Money in the Bank, then you could think about, okay, who's next? Is it Randy Orton? It would be a sin if they don't do Cody and Randy at some point, but do you do it now? Do you wait? Because I could see Cody and Randy being the SummerSlam match. If Rock is not coming back for SummerSlam, Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, hey, makes all the sense in the world to me. Randy could be a babyface, he could be a heel, it works either way. You get past Randy Orton, there aren't a lot of viable contenders for that title. That's going to be a problem unless they start building people up or the GMs work out some trades. Just because the draft is over does not mean the general managers cannot trade people back and forth. I thought Braun Strowman, for example, would work as a great challenger for Cody at some point later this year. He's on Raw. Doesn't mean he can't be traded over to SmackDown. We'll see how the GMs utilize the trades, which I believe they are going to do trades. They're going to have to, because it's pretty barren on that side when it comes to challenger. Yeah, you could turn Lashley, that's true. Again, they may have no choice. Because once you get past AJ and you get past Randy Orton, I mean, what else do you got unless you start turning people? You know, you don't have much. You don't have much to go on here. What did you think of SmackDown here from France? 79% of you have given this show tonight a thumbs up. 12.7% thumbs in the middle, 8% thumbs down. Boy, you guys seem to really have liked SmackDown tonight. Could probably thank the crowd for that. I know that's why I like SmackDown tonight. No, I thought it was a good go-home show, like I said before. I think the key matches they needed to really hype up that one last bit of hype before tomorrow, I thought they did a good job of that. The rest of the show was very missable. But those two things, I thought, ended up being very good. Now, before I get into your super chats, and again, if you want to get them on in, now is the time to do so. And hit that like button as well. We're going to try to do Be the Booker. I don't know where we are at this point. The goal tonight was 400 likes. We're currently sitting at 345, so we're getting there. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. But I made a very special announcement, a cool announcement the other night, for those of you who may have missed it. Starting this Tuesday, May 7th, I'm going to be joining JD from New York on his channel every Tuesday night live at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time for Tuesday Night Titans. I am the new co-host for TNT. Shout out to Andrew Baydala, the former co-host with JD. Andrew's a friend of mine and had to step away from the show. Very honored to be stepping in, and it's going to be a very lively, active debate and discussion, I'm sure, every Tuesday, talking wrestling, all kinds of topics, all kinds of stories. And JD and I have been commentary partners in House of Glory now for over 5 years. I've known him for a while now, and for the first time, the two of us are going to be collaborating. A lot of people have asked for it. A lot of people were very excited. I got to tell you, I was very overwhelmed, frankly, by the reaction to it. I knew people would be excited for it, but I think I underestimated how happy and how excited people would be for it. So it makes me feel good. Because it is another commitment. You know, I'm going to be streaming now on Mondays, Tuesdays. Well, I'm not technically streaming, but doing a show on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and sometimes Saturdays and Sundays for pay-per-views, plus my podcast on Sundays. So it's going to be a lot of work, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I want you guys to join me for that first show. I want that first show to just blow the whole fucking thing wide open. We need to have thousands of people joining us live for that first show on Tuesday. So whatever you do, make sure you mark it on your calendar. You clear out your schedule. 8:30 Eastern time over on his channel live for TNT. It's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully I'll see you guys over there for Titans. Titans. Yes, busy Solomonster. Solomonster is very busy. Somebody has to counterbalance. You know, I mean, my God, sometimes the fucking vein in the side of his forehead looks like it's going to pop. I don't want him to have a fucking aneurysm. Somebody has to be there to counter this man. Think I'm the man for the job. Well, we'll find out. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. Thank you, as always, for the support. Say it all the time. I will always thank you guys for sticking with me here. Let's start with some of the early ones, and then we'll go through the list that you see here on screen. Let's start out with Joshua Edwards, who says, Wingstop commercial feeds families. That Wingstop commercial is going to drive somebody, I think, into an absolute rage one day, and they're going to lose their minds and just go on a rampage. I hope I'm wrong. But that no flex zone, I hear it in my sleep. And it's kind of driving me a little batty, I'm not going to lie. Jay Glow with the 999 says the Wrestling Observer Newsletter report about Roman and Paul Heyman politicking Vince and Hunter to retain the WWE title at WrestleMania 39 infuriates me to no end. Joe is a two-faced weasel, backstage politician, in my opinion. F you, Joe. So he has gone in on Roman Reigns here and turned on Roman Reigns based on a report from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter that may or may not be true. Meltzer has had a rough time recently with some of the things that he has reported. All I will say to you, Jay Glow, is don't believe everything you hear. I'm not even sure why we're still talking about the planning for the WrestleMania 40 main event. It's over. It's done. Cody finished his story. He's the champion. Roman did the job. Should it have happened last year? Probably. It didn't. But it happened this year. It's over now. Why are we still debating this? Why are we still talking about this? Don't be so angry about it. Kentucky Fried Chicken. The passion by the Lyon crowd is white hot. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. White hot. Prince Vegeta with the 1999. Saw a report today that I can't believe from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave said that WWE has no definite plans for Cody and that if Roman would come back to WWE tomorrow, they would throw the belt right back on him. What are your thoughts? Again, don't believe everything that you hear. I don't buy that for a second. I don't buy that WWE has no plans for Cody Rhodes. Do they have a lack of depth on the SmackDown side as far as challengers for him right now? They do. That does not mean they have no plan for it. I don't believe that WWE planned this whole story with Cody Rhodes has to come back and fight his way back to WrestleMania and win the Royal Rumble and go to Mania and beat Roman Reigns and win the Undisputed title. And then they said, oh shit, we forgot to figure out what comes after WrestleMania. I mean, do you honestly believe they have no plans for their top star in the company? Like, I can understand them having no plans for Giovanni Vinci. Okay, poor fucking guy. I don't know. You know, I would feel a little scared if I were him. That I can believe. Do they have plans for Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro? Okay, maybe not. But they have no plans in mind for Cody Rhodes. They have no idea what they're going to do with their biggest star in the company, the guy that made them $1 million in merchandise over WrestleMania weekend. No, I don't believe that. William, I completely forgot about the wrestling matches scheduled for tomorrow until I logged into YouTube and saw this thumbnail. Thanks, Solomonster. You're very welcome. That's what I'm here for. Jay Glow with another $9.99 to the Roman Reigns stands. Tonight was the highest grossing SmackDown in WWE history. And you know who is at the top of the card? Who the quarterback is? Cody effing Rhodes. DX crotch chop to you. Man, Jay Glow is on one tonight. He is not having any of this. Jay Glow is feeling a certain way here tonight. I love the enthusiasm, Jay Glow. He's passionate. He's very passionate, if nothing else. I will say that. Rodimus Prime says, happy Friday, Solo. By the way, Def Rebel sucks. Yes, they do. You know, for every good Def Rebel theme, there's like 7 bad ones. I mean, look, Roman Reigns' current theme is a Def Rebel theme, and I like Roman's current theme. But again, for every good or decent Def Rebel song, there's at least half a dozen terrible ones. And the WWE music situation, you want to call it, I would call it a situation, crisis. The WWE music crisis right now has never been as bad as it is right now. And it sucks because the entrance music is such an important part of someone's character, you know, from the moment it first hits when they walk out there, and it just doesn't hit the way that it used to. And there's no reason for it. If Triple H and Nick Khan wanted to make a move right now, they can make a move right now if they wanted to. Whether it's Jim Johnston or somebody else, they can make a move. I've read reports that WWE, they're well aware. You know, they're well aware of the feedback on Def Rebel and how people feel about them. Okay, well, what are you going to do about it? I mean, it's nice that they're aware of it, but are they actually going to do something about it? That's my question. The Juliet. Best of luck to Julia Hart after her shoulder surgery. She was hurt going into Dynasty. That's why her match with Willow was so short. Well, when I reviewed Dynasty, I think I made that comment. I said, boy, you know, this was the shortest match of the night. Shorter than any of the matches that she had had on pay-per-view prior to that. And I said it probably has to do with the shoulder, because even then there were reports that she hurt her shoulder in the match with Layla Hirsch. And sure enough, that's exactly why the match was so short. I think it was like 6 minutes. Adrian with the $7. Rumor has it that John Cena has been spotted in France. If Cena is a surprise for Backlash, how do you see things playing out? Potential for a Cody versus Cena clash would be legendary. Well, that is not going to happen, not this year. Cena is all booked up in Hollywood. He did say he was hoping to clear his schedule around Christmas time and they would let him get a break so he can come back for one more proper run in WWE, and that might be his retirement run going into WrestleMania next year. That implies that he will not have a lot of free time between now and then. Certainly, he can make a one-off, but not for a program with a Cody Rhodes. So no, I don't think that's what they're going to do. When they were in London for Money in the Bank, John Cena made a surprise appearance there, and he made the pitch for London to get a WrestleMania, right? And then he got beat up by Grayson Waller, and I think he left Waller laying. If John Cena is going to do anything on the show tomorrow, I think it's going to be something along those lines. I think it's going to be a one-off. I think it's going to be him coming out for a segment. Maybe a heel comes out. They have a little back and forth. I don't think he would be there to set up a program, I don't think. Unless he's going to go ahead and try to promise a WrestleMania to France and lie to them the way he lied to London. Maybe. Again, I just can't understand why they would have Cena go out there the way that he did and make the pitch that he did. When the reports recently, and Nick Khan said it himself, that they sat down months ago and made the decision that the big tentpole shows that they have, the Rumble and WrestleMania and SummerSlam, are going to be North American based. All the other events are up for grabs. They can have those events anywhere in the world, but they've already made the decision to keep events like WrestleMania here in North America, either the US or Canada. Then I see Triple H responded to the mayor of London last week on Twitter, who said that he was going to try to bring WrestleMania to the city, and he says, let's talk. So which is it? Are they considering locations outside of North America for WrestleMania or not? I mean, if they just went out there to tease it and they have no intention of bringing WrestleMania to London, that's cruel. Like, why would you do that? Why would you promise something to the fans if you have no intention of actually delivering it? Doesn't make sense. Draven Lord, buy or sell, better lariat, Stan Hansen or JBL? I like the clothesline from hell. I do. I don't like a lot about JBL, but I always like the clothesline from hell. Not that I would want to be hit by a Stan Hansen lariat. I'm going to say JBL, though. I'm going to buy on him. Kentucky Dry Chicken without flavor. This Lyon, France crowd tonight on SmackDown has cracked the top five hottest wrestling crowd pops in the world. They sing people's entrances. Well, they're not the only ones to do that. But they were great. They were fantastic tonight. Shout out to Retro KOH. Good to see Chris in the chat. Alex, Brother Solo, do you sense a change in the quality of matches when WWE refers to their pay-per-views as pay-per-views rather than PLEs? No. No. It means the same thing. There has no difference whatsoever between quality of matches on one over the other. It's all the same. Makes no difference. Donnie Yasu, I guess Triple H said that WWE got a warning about the crowd noise tonight. Got a warning? What does that mean? Fire Panda with the $20. Thank you, Fire Panda. And thank you, Donnie, as well. Who had the better entrance? 98 Kane or 98 Undertaker? Also, who wins in a fight? 1,000-pound polar bear or Kurt Angle? You know, for better entrance, I'm going to go 98 Undertaker. Kane had better entrances later on. I'm going to go 98 Undertaker. If you want to see one of the coolest fucking entrances that you will ever see, and I'm going to actually tell you on the podcast this Sunday what I think is the greatest entrance ever in wrestling history. We'll save that for Sunday. You want to see a badass entrance, you go back and you watch that Judgment Day 1998 pay-per-view. I think it was in October of that year. They had Undertaker against Kane. The title was vacated. Steve Austin was the guest referee. Undertaker came out to make his entrance. I think he came out first. And just that whatever version of his theme that he was using at that point in the fall of 98 was badass. But the image of him walking to the ring and then the big booms, the big concussion booms, and then the flames shooting up behind him like five or six times as he walked down to the ring and they get that shot of his face. Just the coolest fucking entrance you'll ever see. So for that alone, I gotta go Undertaker. Base Beerus, remember when Dusty told Steph to talk to the hand? Yes, I do. And then we didn't see Dusty again on TV, I don't think. Someone didn't like that. Jerome Eugenio, is Brett versus Davey Boy the best WWE international pay-per-view main event? Um, It might be. I'm trying to think of all the international shows they've had. They've had a lot of them recently. Yeah, you know what? It might be. Kentucky Dry Chicken without flavor. Glitchy, glitchy, ya-ya, da-da. Creole Lady Marmalade. Very good. Haven't heard that one in a while. Hasn't come up on my Pandora in a while. It's not on my playlist. Prince Vegeta, I know you're front runner for women's, but who is your early men's Money in the Bank winner? Maybe have heel AJ Styles win it. Well, if Tiffany Stratton is going to win it for the women, I don't think they would have another recent name from NXT win it. Like, I can't see Tiffany winning the women's and then Bron Breakker winning the men's, or, you know, some Carmelo Hayes. I don't think they would do two of them like that. So if Tiffany wins the women's briefcase, I mean, you've got a lot of different options. You could do LA Knight. You know, LA Knight could win. And I mean, if he were to win and cash in for a US title match, it would make him look like a fucking idiot, though. So I probably wouldn't do that. Because I wouldn't have him challenging for a world title unless he's going to win it. He already challenged for it once and lost. So unless you're sure that he's going to walk out with that title, I would not have him challenging for a world title. Therefore, I would not have him win Money in the Bank. So scratch that. I don't know. I haven't given much thought to the men's Money in the Bank winner. I have the women's winner in my head, and I have a sense of who I think should win the men's tournament next month, the King of the Ring. I think it's going to be Gunther or Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre could win King of the Ring and then cash in, if in fact you can cash in for a world title match, cash that in at Clash at the Castle. He goes to Glasgow, challenges for the world heavyweight title. Maybe he wins it. I mean, I think it would be crazy if he were to headline on that show and not win it. Men's Money in the Bank is a little tougher, though. I got to think about that. All the people that I would want to win it, though, are pretty much accounted for in other ways. Yeah, like Chad Gable, he's probably going to win the Intercontinental title straight up from Sami Zayn. He shouldn't win Money in the Bank anyway, because he's not going to be challenging for a world title. Yeah, I don't know. Prince Vegeta, thank you for the question. Kentucky Dried Chicken says, I am making a big, bold prediction. Uh-oh, here we go. WWE will come to Africa to host a stadium show in the future. Which country? I don't know, but keep this recording. They've been to South Africa before. They've done shows from Johannesburg. There was an awful taped episode of Raw from three different locations that is easily the worst Raw in the history of the show. Or second worst. Behind that piece of shit episode from 2018 that I ranted about. Yeah, you know what? I don't put anything past them. If they have a stadium big enough for it, then they'll probably end up on every continent at some point. They'll end up in Antarctica at some point. Bundle up. It's going to be cold. Arabian Night 2000. You think this 5-minute match formula for most PLEs is good. Seems like there's too much filler on PLEs with video packages. Hey, Barry, thank you. Seems like there is too much filler on PLEs with video packages. No IC or US title matches is dumb. Yeah, the US title and the Intercontinental title now seem to be reserved for television. That's especially true on the Raw side. One way to look at it is it allows them to main event episodes of Raw, like Sammy and Gable did in Montreal a few weeks ago. So it puts the spotlight on them in a main event position. I agree, though, when you have a big show like a SummerSlam or a Royal Rumble, you should have the Intercontinental title represented all the time. So I agree with you on that. The 5-minute match formula, I don't know what you're talking about, because most of the PLEs, I mean, the matches are longer than 5 minutes. So I don't know exactly what you're talking about there. Phil Dog, with Ethan Page done with AEW, do you see him going back to TNA or will he end up with WWE? I don't know. I don't know what he wants to do. I think that he could very well end up back in TNA, but I could also see him being used in NXT. You know, he's talented. He's talented and he can talk. He has a presence about him. He carries himself very well. He carries himself with a certain confidence. It just wasn't working out in AEW. I don't blame him for wanting out. It was like they had him most recently wrestling in Ring of Honor. He was too big for Ring of Honor, but there was no obvious spot for him in AEW. So he kind of fell into this donut hole, which is not the place that you want to be if you want to be out there and work and try to, you know, up your stock and get your name out there. And clearly that wasn't happening for him and he wasn't happy. So, you know, apparently he requested his release as early as February. Recently he got it. Now he'll be free to go out and pursue whatever he wants to pursue. Maybe we can get him on into House of Glory. I'd love to have him in Hog. Get him in there for a match. But yeah, I could definitely see him back in TNA, maybe doing something with his old tag team partner, Josh Alexander. Maybe they wrestle each other. Prince Vegeta with the $4.99. Rewatching the 2017 Backlash. Almost went to that show. Would have loved to have been in the crowd just for the shock of that Jinder Mahal title win. I have not seen a crowd that shocked since Brock Lesnar ended the Undertaker streak. Their faces and their reactions said it all. You could read the pain on a lot of their faces. I know this because I was feeling that same pain watching it from home then. Moise with the $4.99. Solomonster. So excited to see you on Tuesday night. Titans with JD. Going to be the best IWC podcast ever. I marked out when I saw the announcement. You and a lot of other people, man. A lot of people have been requesting this collaboration for a long time. Now you get it on a permanent basis. But yeah, once we get going with this and you put our two heads together, ain't nobody going to be able to top what we're going to be putting out there. It's going to be great. Going to be great. I'm glad that you're excited for it. I am too. Mr. LH says, I miss CM Punk. You miss CM Punk? He was just on TV the other night. How can you miss him? He doesn't go away. He was like the best segment on Raw with Drew McIntyre this week. How can you miss him? Arabian Knight says, say what you want about Tony Khan. He pays for good music. He does, although he also admits that he went way over budget, and that's why he had to cut some people recently. So, I love the music he pays for too, but
Samoa Bro.
I mean, I love the music he pays for, but at the expense of people's jobs, I just think it's a bad look when you admit that publicly. Kevin Dunn's Bieber is joining us tonight. That Wingstop commercial makes me want to yeet myself. I don't blame you. Base Beerus. Jack Perry against Tony Khan. Texas Deathmatch. No, please. Don't give Tony any ideas. He's living out his dream right now by taking bumps on TV. The next step after this is having a proper match. Do you really want to see Tony Khan get into a ring and wrestle a match? You probably do, don't you? You sick freak. You probably want that just so I can review it. You would be looking forward more to the review than the actual match. I probably would do good numbers that night too. But no, I have no interest in seeing that. So please, let's not wish this. Let's not talk this into existence, okay? No, nobody is asking for this. Arabian Night, best entrance is Goldberg. Halloween Havoc 98. That was a great one too. I love that entrance too with the big pumpkin when he walks around the pumpkin. They follow him all the way from the back. That's a great one. Not the best entrance of all time, but that's a great one. Barry MK with the $15. Hey, Barry, thank you, man. I'm about to see Vengeance 2005 as I continue to watch the old Ruthless Aggression era shows in order. How did you like that show? Plus its great theme, Happy by Mudvayne. I don't remember anything other than that had the Hell in a Cell, right, with Triple H and Batista. And did that have the second match with Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle, if I'm not mistaken? I like that. If I'm thinking of the same, if I'm thinking of the right show, I did like that that show. Moyes with the $4.99. I'm always fascinated on how much historical facts you remember just off the top of your head. You are like a wrestling historian. How do you remember it all? I don't know, because sometimes I don't remember what I had, you know, for breakfast 2 days ago, but yet I can remember who Hacksaw Jim Duggan wrestled on this show in 1993, and I can't fucking explain it. I don't know. Hey, Dark Side of the Ring, guys. Whoa, what's going on here? Call me. If Chris Jericho, if you ever need a new narrator, I'm just saying, you know, that Jericho guy, man, he's a little controversial. If you ever need a new narrator for the show, hit me up. EJ Slemp, would making being fired an option to Money in the Bank like TNA's Feast or Fired make it interesting, or is that a bad idea? It's a bad idea. Unless you're actually planning on firing the person, then nobody buys it. So I think it's a bad idea. Fire Panda with the $20 super chat. Undertaker's Judgment Day 98 entrance was badass, but don't sleep on Kane's entrance that night. You should do a Judgment Day 98 Kane vs. Undertaker watch along sometime. Who do the Wyatt Six attack tomorrow, and who are the members? You seem very sure that the Wyatt Six are going to be attacking anybody tomorrow. I'm not so sure of that. If they were to attack anybody tomorrow, I wonder if it would be Cody. I wonder if it would be Cody. Because, again, Cody needs challengers. If AJ was to be a one-and-done, and they're going to headline the show, Cody wins, and that's it. Maybe the lights go out. I could maybe see that. I don't know how likely that is. I don't know why some people are expecting this to happen tomorrow. I feel like they're going to drag it out longer. Is this some sort of common belief that the Wyatt Six is going to be revealed tomorrow? Let's go to our resident Wyatt expert here in the chat, BlissFan. Are you expecting the Wyatt Six to appear, or Uncle Howdy to appear tomorrow at Backlash? I'll believe it only if BlissFan believes it. Mystic J, who do you see winning Queen of the Ring? I don't even know who's in Queen of the Ring. Nobody has declared. Nobody's qualified. I have no idea who is even in the tournament. I think you could probably take out Jade and Bianca if we assume that they're going to be a tag team or tag team champions coming out of the show tomorrow. You could take out Zelina. She's not winning, you know, the crown after she won the last one. Tiffany could. Me personally, though, again, I would go Money in the Bank with her. So I'll put Tiffany on the side here. It's not going to be Naomi. I don't think it's going to be any of the members of Damage Control. I don't have the rosters in front of me. I'm trying to think of who's on SmackDown right now. The key players in that women's division really would be Bianca and Bayley and Jade and Naomi, Tiffany, Nia. You know what? I could see Nia Jax winning Queen of the Ring. I'm going to go. You put me on the spot here without having all the names in front of me or knowing who's in it. I'll give you an early prediction. I could see Nia Jax winning. Based Beerus, God of Seduction. Flair was not interviewed for Death of WCW documentary. Wooing stop. They know better. Also, Idiocracy. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Never saw it. Flair was, yeah, I saw Flair. He was bitching about something. You know, when he's, why does he post in all capital fucking letters? The first letter of every fucking word that he tweets is in caps. What the fuck is wrong with him? I don't know why it annoys me so much. You ever notice that? Why does he do that? It's got to be the program or like the app that he's using. It's just incredibly annoying. But yeah, no, he was going off about something and whatever. You know, old man yells at cloud. I don't pay attention to it. Barry MK. It also had a second world title match with Cena, Christian, and Chris Jericho. Yeah, I have no memory of that. I have no memory of that. I remember the other two matches from Vengeance. I don't remember that one. Uffman says Solid Monster needs to be a talking head in Dark Side of the Ring next season. Probably not a talking head, just because they generally go with retired wrestlers and managers. If it were a WWE documentary, you know, they use Sam Roberts and Peter Rosenberg and people like that, hey, then that's a different story. Dark Side of the Ring, I don't think generally that they do that, but I said, hey, I'm just saying, you ever need a new narrator? I've watched every episode. Obviously, I'm a fan of the show. Arabian Night, Fiend debut was an all-time great entrance as well. Yes, it was. At SummerSlam against Finn Balor, that was great. With that lantern with the stretched out mouth, that was very freaky. The Juliet, congrats to Seth on the new contract. Yes, congratulations to Seth Rollins. He has re-signed, as Drew McIntyre has as well. With WWE for an undisclosed length of time. It's said to be for what I'm sure is very good money. And I'm sure if she hasn't already, Becky Lynch will not be too far behind because her contract is up in a few weeks as well. I mean, she is the women's champion after all, so I'm sure they'll get her locked down very soon. Kentucky Fried Chicken, I will order Tony Khan some Wingstop, Popeyes, KFC, and Burger King so that he cannot compete in the ring. I like that idea. We're going to fatten him up so that way he will be in just gross physical shape, put some meat on those bones, and therefore he will not be able to properly train himself to get in the ring and take bumps. See, I like the way you think. Let's fatten this guy up. Let's get as much trans fat and just all the bad shit. Let's get as much of that in him as possible. That neck brace, he's going to be so swollen, that neck brace won't even fit his neck anymore. He won't even have a neck. It'll be like King Kong Bundy had no neck. It was like a head on top of a fucking body. That's going to be Tony Khan. Fat Tony Khan. There's a gimmick for you. You know, it reminds me, Bobby Lashley said he once pitched the idea to Vince McMahon. Yeah, all the people recently have been making fun of Sheamus for coming back and being a little bit heavier, and he's already losing most of the weight. But he talked about how he pitched the idea of getting fat, like really just like stuffing himself and putting on a ton of weight and doing that as a gimmick where he then has to lose all the weight. And I guess, you know, Vince didn't go for it, but I'm trying to like picture that in my head, like Bobby Lashley, who's in just like immaculate physical condition. He looks like a statue. Guy's almost 50 years old, and him just basically quitting and just eating whatever he wants and 350 pounds walking around, and then the gimmick is that he has to lose all the weight. Boney, what happened to Paul Heyman between getting fired from the WWE and returning in 2012? Did he work with another company or maybe the indies? No, he has his own company called the Looking for Larry. I think it's a production company. It's based out of New York. And he was doing that. I know he popped up with Brock Lesnar once at one of his UFC fights, so I don't know what else he may have been doing, if he was mentoring people. But he has, I think he still does. He still has the Looking for Larry stuff that he does. The Heyman Hustle. I think HeymanHustle.com is still up. So he was involved in that stuff. But nothing in wrestling. And Base Beerus, Victoria 2003 would have fit in today's roster. Yeah, absolutely. Victoria would fit in today's roster from 02, 03, 05. Victoria was great. Victoria should be in the Hall of Fame. And I think she will be one day. All right, Be the Booker goal was 400 likes. We are currently sitting at 431 likes. Give yourselves a round of applause in the chat. Job well done. Keep hitting that thumbs up, though. Let's be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Yeah, I mean, Heyman almost went to TNA. TNA wanted him, but Dixie just couldn't do it. She couldn't give up the power. So it never happened. What would a Paul Heyman-led TNA have looked like? We will never know. Be the Booker time. Here we go. I was going to say the last one of the week, but we're hopefully going to be doing one tomorrow on the Backlash stream if we hit the goal then. We begin with, look at this. The American Wolves. Didn't we just pick them? Wasn't it the American Wolves and the Head Shrinkers on Wednesday on the Dynamite stream? And now we just landed on these two again, Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, for the second time in as many streams. I mean, they were a good team, but come on now. We gotta shake things up a little bit here. What is this? The American, if I swear to God, if we land on the Head Shrinkers again, I'm going to let it run a little bit. We cannot land on the Head Shrinkers. All right. American Wolves. All right, well, that's different. The American Wolves and LAX. We have Homicide and Hernandez. Remember Hernandez and the border toss? How recklessly dangerous that looked? I would not have wanted to be on the receiving end of a border toss from this guy. I'll tell you that much. All right, women's Be the Booker. That would have been a hard-hitting match, though, so I like that one. Over on the women's side, we begin with the former NXT and former WWE women's champion, the lovely Io Sky. One of the best in the world. Io Sky. This one's going to be hard to mess up, I think. I think we got this one in the bag here. Io Sky going to go one... Oh, my fucking God. Every single time I open my mouth, I jinx it. Of all of the people that we have here in this Tumblr, all you had to do was take someone reasonably competent in the ring and just stick them in there with Io, and you would have had an easy bell. And we land on Rosa Mendez. We had it. We had it. It was right there. It was in our grasp. We had it. We had it. And we threw it all away. All right, main event time. I know. I learned the hard way. All right, main event begins with the narcissist, Lex Luger, who loved looking at himself in the giant mirror every time he would come out. One of the best physiques, if not, frankly, the best physique ever in all of wrestling back in his prime was Lex Luger. Can't say that the narcissist was my favorite gimmick of his. But let's see here. Lex Luger. One-on-one. With Bret the Hitman Hart. The match that we should have gotten at WrestleMania 10. Although that wasn't the narcissist. But the match we should have had at WrestleMania 10. At MSG. And it was taken away from us. We were deprived of having that match. You know, Bret Hart and the Narcissist did wrestle. It just wasn't on TV. I know they wrestled because I saw it on a Coliseum video once. So I know it happened. Remember when the Narcissist knocked out Bret with his loaded forearm at the WrestleMania 9 press conference? And they blamed that for why he may have lost to Yokozuna? It's so weird because you could find so many examples back then in the early 90s of matches that were teased on television, feuds that were teased, and we just never got the match televised. I mean, they may have done them at house shows, you know, Undertaker and Nails, Undertaker and Berserker, Roddy Piper and Ric Flair, Lex Luger and Bret Hart. They never did any of those matches, though, on like a major pay-per-view match or even television. I mean, Undertaker and Berserker, maybe they had a television match. But you just find so many examples of that. But now there's so many hours of television. I mean, these days it would be impossible not to do it. It's just the way things were back then. Crazy with the $5 super chat. Yep, Flair and Hogan. Of course, Flair and Hogan is another one. There will be a four-part documentary of the demise of WCW, produced by the Dark Side of the Ring creators and the Final Boss. How excited are you about that? I am not excited at all. I am so over all of this death of WCW stuff. And then you get the usual talking heads. I saw the trailer. You got Bischoff and you got Russo. Fucking gag me at this point. I don't know if I'm even going to watch it. I might be interested to see what the first episode is like, but you know, you're going to get the same look. You're going to get the same lies and tales spun by the same people that have been telling them for the last 20 plus years. You're not going to learn much different than you already know. Jay Glow, what are your thoughts on the NXT releases today? Very sad to see. I'll run down all of the names on Sunday, but yeah, it's sad whenever anybody loses their job, but it's NXT. And you expect there to be a certain level of turnover with people who either are not progressing fast enough or people that they have absolutely no plans on using. You know, why would you hold on to people like that? So it's not surprising, but it's always sad when people lose their job. I don't celebrate it. I don't say, oh, I'm so happy so-and-so got released. No, you'd have to be a fucking idiot to do that. It's always a sad thing. Base Beerus, Luger putting Hogan in the rack was amazing. Yeah, I mean, that was the 100th episode of Nitro in 97, and they were in Detroit, if I remember, and the crowd went wild for it. I was shocked, you know, to see Hogan just give up clean in the torture rack. So that was one of the greatest moments in the history of Nitro. Yeah, not a lot of big names released. Actually, no big names released. The biggest of the names released was Drew Gulak, former cruiserweight and 24/7 champion. So again, I would not say anybody big was released. Gulak would be the biggest of them all, though. Kentucky Dried Chicken, Io Sky versus Rosa Mendez. The Mets commentary team calls this match. If anybody can make that match watchable, it's Gary, Keith, and Ron. Best announced team in all of sports. I don't care what anybody says. Ultra Beast Boys coming in with a $5 super chat. Did you listen to that Rikishi diss song against Hogan? I did. I'll tell you what, the part of it that made me laugh the most and got the biggest reaction out of me, there's a Family Matters Steve Urkel reference early on in the song. That popped me. That popped me more than anything else, I think, in the entire track. Because it's so dated. Fresh Prince or Family Matters, which was better? I watched them both. I was a big Family Matters guy. Saw every episode. Knew every character on the show. Even the daughter who went up to her bedroom one day in the first season and never came back down. We never saw her again. Hey, Chris M. just subscribed. Look at Daniel Garcia doing the dance. Will he do that dance on Sunday? Just added to the House of Glory Cinco de Mayo show on Sunday at the NYC Arena. Daniel Garcia has been added to the show. Maybe he could teach me the dance. You know, last time Swerve and Prince Nana came to the NYC Arena, I had Nana teach me the dance. What do you think? Should I learn the Daniel Garcia dance? I don't know. But yeah, he's going to be on the show. It's going to be a big show. We got Rey Fénix and Penta, brother versus brother, in the main event on Sunday. If you can't be at the arena live, Triller TV Plus. JD and I will be doing commentary for the show, which means that I'm going to have to do my show early. I have to figure out how I'm going to work that, but I will do my show, and then I will do the Hog Show, back to back. I will jump in my car, and I will drive to Queens so that I could do the Hog Show. So it's going to be a busy weekend for, oh my God, and then we have the pay-per-view tomorrow. Fuck. Yeah, boy, this weekend's going to be something else, isn't it? This is going to be something, because we had SmackDown tonight. We've got Backlash tomorrow. We've got the podcast on Sunday, House of Glory on Sunday. The Raw stream on Monday, TNT with JD on Tuesday, Dynamite on Wednesday. And then I might actually get a little break on Thursday. I'm actually looking forward to that. Busy, busy, busy. Base Beerus. Speed is like Velocity 2.0, the name, and green. Oh, WWE Speed? Yeah, I saw that. They crowned a new Speed champion. Ricochet is the first ever Speed champion. They have a new belt for it. Speed is basically, it's this concept they came up with for a show on Twitter, on X, where they had a tournament, and it's a series of 3-minute matches. They don't go longer than 3 minutes. Because people have the attention span of a fucking fruit fly. So that's the whole concept. It's like very, very quick matches. I'm sure some people enjoy it. I don't really care for it, but if you do, good for you. All right, so tomorrow we are going to be doing the Backlash recap as soon as the pay-per-view is over. And remember, it's a 1 o'clock Eastern start, which means it's probably going to go to about 4. So between 4 and 4:30, plan to be here because I will be live on YouTube. Before you have your dinner tomorrow, you come here and I will fill you in on everything that happens on this pay-per-view. We'll go over all of it. And then, of course, episode 860 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off will be dropping on Sunday, probably early, so I can make the hog show. And thank you again for all of the feedback this week on the TNT announcement. I am very much looking forward to that. Uffman Entertainment with the final super chat here. Judy is seen at Grandma Winslow's wedding in season 4, and then we never see her again. Is she? I don't remember that. I'll take your word for it. All I remember is that Judy went up to her room one day, and I don't ever remember seeing her again. And then I think she ended up doing porn. Didn't she end up, when she got older, doing adult films? What a career. To go from Family Matters to adult films. Anyway, on that note, there's some food for thought heading into your weekend. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. I'll see you for the Backlash stream tomorrow. Take care, guys.